Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Now, over the weekend, Thailand went through the polls after 5 years of military rule. Now, the question is the system that was enacted for these elections designed to keep the military, in fact, in a leading position in Thai society beyond that? So the question that's been put to, and I'm going to put to my guest today, is Thailand on the road to genuine democracy? I have with me Ayman Afifuddin. He is a senior analyst with Karim Razalan Associates, KRA, as it's well known. Ayman, you were there on the ground. I'm always interested in those first-hand reports now of people who are there, because it gets us beyond the kind of news reports that we often get, which is full of numbers and kind of fragmented comments. Why were you there? What was your role as a senior analyst for KRA in Thailand?
Thank you for having me, Sharad. We at KRA Group, there's two tracks to what we do. First is the political risk consultancy, public affairs, and the other is the Cerita Lah perspective, where my boss, Pak Karim Razlan, has an article that he shares with the region and internationally.
Right, so he's got a syndicated column, right?
Yeah, so it's published in medias across the region, Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore, Philippines, and Vietnam, to name a few.
Right, so you were there presumably for the first prong, which is to supply a sense of what's going on, risk analysis, right? So tell us, when you went to Thailand, I mean, what were you seeking to do? I mean, who were you talking to? Where did you travel in order to get a comprehensive sense of where the country is going, especially at this very crucial juncture?
We always travel across ASEAN, like almost all the time. In Thailand in particular, me and my team, we tend to go in and out every other month. We trade. Sometimes I go to the north and my colleague will go to the south. But recently, as of, I was there last week, actually. So I was in Bangkok and I decided to make a trip up north to Chiang Mai and the surrounding areas. And also I went to down south, which is the Songkla Hat Yai area, just to see, just to get a sense of everything, like the ordinary citizen, like how are they feeling? What are their thoughts about the election? Are they fans of certain leaders? So just to gauge their expectations of this particular election.
Okay, so I mean, in some ways you're kind of doing the work of what an ordinary journalist might do, right? Which is to get a sense of the mood on the ground. Now tell us, two very different parts of the country, because you were in Bangkok, but then the northwest, Chiang Mai region, dominated by its own sort of dynamics, and then the south, and not quite the deep south, because you didn't go to Pattani, did you? The deep south also having a very different dynamic, and so tell us about that. Tell us, what was the feel like? I mean, was it different in the northwest and the south of the country in terms of what people wanted from this election? Did they think it was genuine? Were they excited by the possibilities of, leaving military rule, as it were?
So Sunday was a remarkable day for Thailand. Yeah.
Right. So that was the polling day. Right?
That was the polling day. Yes. Right. After 8 long years, the voters, they finally had the chance to elect their own government. So they were basically dying for an election. I was chatting with stall owners, just farmers and such, and I kind of got a good perspective. So in the north, the Thaksin-affiliated Pueh Thai Party is very popular throughout the decades, ever since his first stint as Prime Minister back in 2001. And what I found there, people there, as a majority, they are still in love with Thaksin. And they would definitely vote for Pueh Thai in the coming elections. There was one interesting older chap, this voter. He told me that Thaksin is very much loved in his family. And for him in particular, he told me that because back then Thaksin introduced this universal healthcare program called the 30 baht policy, where he gave healthcare insurance to the rural folks. So one of his friends, this particular older gentleman, was suffering from an illness. After he got the treatment that he needed and such, he actually went up to everyone and he thanked the doctor and Thaksin. So I think that gave us like it gives us a good understanding of how Thaksin affected, like how he is loved throughout the North and Northeast provinces.
Right, the Northeast. Okay, so the Northeast is representing a lot of Lao-speaking people. I want to ask you about the South, though. The South was dominated by politicians from the Democrat Party, I believe, were very popular in the South. What was the feeling there? Were they apprehensive about this move by the military? Did they want to see a return of forces associated with Thaksin, and because Thaksin in many ways credited for a rise in conflict in the Deep South, you know, all those years ago. So what was the feel in the South?
Well, in this election, based on my conversations with the people, two things are important. Number one is the economy. So the majority of Thais are very unhappy with the economic standing of the country in the past 5 years. And they tend to link this with Prayut's premiership. Although although GDP growth has been okay, relatively okay in the past few years, it doesn't really resonate with the rural folks, as in the farmers and such. Yeah, so because for example, rubber prices it has dropped 65% since 2011, and this is around the time where they had their last election. So it's important to note that the rubber industry is Thailand is the largest producer and exporter of rubber in the world. So any disruption to this industry would directly and indirectly affect the financial well-being of the ordinary Thai.
Right, okay. So a lot of apprehension. Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll be back to look at the actual game, the electoral game, to see whether Thais thought that this was a fair game or not. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, my guest, Ayman Afifuddin. He is a senior analyst with Karim Razlan Associates. We're talking about the Thai elections. Happened over the weekend. Results still inconclusive. Seems like some confusion about exactly what and who has won this particular electoral cycle. Now, could we, before we get to the results, and the results are quite intriguing for someone who's an outsider and doesn't quite understand the complex electoral system they are, is the system itself. I know the constitution was changed by the junta and the electoral system. Tell us a little bit about what you understand from this electoral system that has direct elections, but also seats reserved for the party in power, as it were. And that's the military at this point in time. Also, a party list system. What do you make of? I mean, somebody with a legal training. I mean, what do you make of this electoral system that they have?
So before the election, the junta drafted a constitution, which was in 2017. Yeah. So critics have argued that this particular constitution it has undermined democracy and the process of the whole election. Yeah. On Sunday, there were 500 seats up for grabs in the lower house, and the upper house, which is the Senate, there's 250 seats. And the upper house is purely appointed by the junta. So people have argued that this would automatically give Prime Minister Prayut additional power to actually maintain his premiership post-election.
Right, so just to put Prayut in context, he was in fact the military commander who led the coup against the elected government, and he's now become a civilian, as it were, and he's got a party that's associated with him. It's a Palang Pracharat. Party. So even though he looks like a civilian, he actually is a military man using a civilian vehicle, that is this party. Right, so how does that play out? Do people suspicious? I mean, ordinary times say, well, Prayut still wants to be in power, he doesn't want to give it up, because he was this promise of an election is long overdue, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Because part of the amendment to the constitution in 2017 it stated that an unelected official can be prime minister. So in this particular election, his party, Palang Pracharat, contested, but he himself did not contest as a MP. So the plan is for his party to attain a high number of seats in the lower house. And when you mix it up with the numbers in the Senate, he will be able to retain power.
So he will nominate himself to one of those seats, those 250 seats in the Senate?
Yes. So prior to the election, each party would have to submit their prime ministerial candidate. So for Palang Pracharat, their sole nominee is Prayut.
To what extent does Thaksin and the Thaksin family, because his sister, Yingluck, who you know also ruled, or rather was the prime minister at one point, how much of an influence do they have? A Pui Tai party being their vehicle, but how much of an influence do they have? I mean, he's now in exile, he's been in exile for many years. Does he exert any kind of influence, you know, over kind of domestic politics?
There have been talks that Thaksin indirectly controls the leadership of Pui Tai, but Pui Tai is its own entity. Yeah, but the policies, the messaging that they have been pushing out is very Thaksin, introducing populist policies that will benefit the rural poor, which are mainly in North and Northeast, but to a certain extent, also in the deep south. So I've met a few business owners, restaurant owners in the south in Songkhla, and they told me I was quite surprised because Democrats there are traditionally very strong, is their stronghold, right? But they told me that, oh, Thaksin is a very powerful and smart individual. He's business-minded and they want the economy to grow once again. So I was quite surprised that him and his family would actually like go all out and campaign and vote for Thaksin.
Right, that's interesting. Yeah. As again, you said, like the Democrat Party, which didn't do so well. We're looking at some of the tentative numbers that have been coming out in the media. The Democrat Party had some 34 seats, as opposed to the Pui Tai Party of 135 seats. I mean, this is some of the latest numbers I had. Palang Pracharat has about 98. Now, and Future Forward, again, kind of an outlier party led by this young billionaire, spare parts billionaire.
Auto parts.
Auto parts, okay. Spare parts, maybe not the word. So Future Forward got 29 seats, but on the party list, it got 51. That, you know, gives it a rather large number, like 80 seats. Tell us, what is this constituency MPs and party list MPs? And why is it that something like Future Forward as a party would gain so many on the party list?
So the election on Sunday was for 500 electoral seats. Yeah, so 350 of those seats are directly constituency-based, whereas the remaining 150 are reserved for party lists. So how it is, it's a bit complex. The 150 seats, it's where each party would nominate a certain number of candidates. So it's based on the popular vote. So amongst the formula is the percentage of the votes that a party would accumulate during the course of the election will factor in to how many seats each party would get.
On the party list?
On the party list. But the constitution, again, is very vague and people say it's undemocratic in the sense where that it does not favour the bigger parties. So the junta drafted this to favour themselves and other smaller parties. So so it's very, it helps Prayut to retain power and diminish Thaksin's party, Pui Tai Party, from prevent them from forming a government.
Right. So but what's interesting is Future Forward Party took some 51 party list seats, so far at least the calculation is, which means it won a high number of popular votes. And where are they aligned? Because I think what we are told is there's a lot of backroom negotiations now to form some sort of coalitions, right? Anti-military coalitions or pro-military coalitions or parties. Where does Future Forward lie in this landscape? Are they pro-Thaksin or pro- or anti-military, or are they pro-military?
So the announcement of the results, the unofficial results, it was supposed to be on the night itself, on Sunday night, but the EC postponed it to the day after from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., 2 p.m., and in the end, it was at 4 p.m. But unfortunately, the EC only shared with us the 350, the majority of the 350 seats, but not
the constituency basis.
Yeah, okay. But they did not share with us the popular vote, the overall tally. So there's no determining factor on how to calculate the remaining 150 seats. So they say they will announce it on Friday. So it depends. But since it would favour smaller parties, the Future Forward would be very beneficial in the sense where on Friday for the constituency seats, they won around 30, but they are expected to gain another 57, around that number, seats due to their popularity amongst the younger generation.
Right. And where are they aligned? Pro-military or anti-military?
They like to refer themselves as pro-democracy. So, in a sense, that it's basically anti-military.
Okay, so we might see them line up with Pui Tai in order to form a government. Okay, let's take a short break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Ayman Afifuddin. He is a senior analyst with Karim Razlan Associates. We're talking about the Thai elections. Happened over the weekend. Sunday was polling day. Not clear in terms of the unofficial results that were expected actually on the day of polling itself. It has been postponed. Not all the results are in from the Elections Commission. The official results are due only May 9th. So sort of a bit of time before the dust settles, as it were. Just before we get to the results and what some of the parties might be doing, the Election Commission itself, I mean, is that an institution that Thais trust? Do they think it has integrity? Do they think it could be, do they think it could be manipulated by the military in order to stay in power?
So the current leadership of the Election Commission is purely appointed by the junta previously. So there's an element of biasness, and I tend to think people would. They do realize it, but they tend to give the benefit of a doubt. But after the mishaps that have occurred in the past 2 days, their confidence towards this institution, who is supposedly independent, have diminished almost entirely.
Right. So okay. So with the erosion of trust in the system, now whoever comes to power, especially the military, comes back to power, roaring back to power, with Prayut at the head of it. Is that going to be kind of a, you know, one of those victories that Prayut is not going to want because it's not going to have the kind of legitimacy that he seeks? I mean, he's a military leader who came to power on the back of a coup and wants to, in some ways, legitimize his rule through an electoral process. But if the system doesn't confer that, is it going to be a long-term problem for Prayut, do you think?
So a normal party, would need 376 seats in the lower house to form a government. But Prayut's Palang Prasharat only need 126 due to the fact that 250 of the senators are already in hand. So they, as it stands, they have 98 seats in the lower house, whereas Pui Tai has 139. So the question is now, which party has the standing and the right to form the core of a possible coalition? Is it the party with the highest number of seats in the lower house, or is it the party with the highest number of votes overall? Although the voting tally has not come out, it will come out on Friday. Initial results stated that Palang Prasharat attained the majority. Right.
So this again, coming back, and we compare this to the Malaysian situation, right? In any kind of scenario, electoral scenario, the right of forming a government goes to the party with the largest number of seats, right? If it fails to form a coalition, then the second in line, as it were. Now, is it likely that Pui Tai, with the largest number of seats, at least for that 350 part of the block of 500 seats that we talked about, is it likely that they will be able to cobble together coalition. We look at some of the other parties, Future Forward, we just talked about, Democrat Party, an old long-standing party within the Thai electoral system, and Bum Jatai Party, which has also done quite well. Are they likely to align with Pueh Thai to form a party?
So the official results will come out on 9th of May. So that's 2 months, approximately 2 months away. So there'll be a lot of horse trading, political horse trading and backroom deals along the way. But all this would not necessarily be made public as the King's coronation will occur a few days before the official results. But after that royal milestone, all bets are off. So they would actually slug it out to get the numbers. So the key here are the kingmakers, I would say, and this would be the Future Forward Party and the Bum Jatai, as you said, because they have the power to actually help Pueh Thai or Parlimen Rakyat to form a government. That being said, Future Forward is pro-democracy, and one of its major policies is basically reducing the military's involvement in the political landscape. So they definitely would side with Thaksin's party, Pueh Thai, but Bum Jatai itself is a swing party, so it can go either way. And the leader of Bum Jatai, Mr. Anutin, has been touted as a possible compromise candidate. So if he were to join Pueh Thai, there's a possibility that he would be forwarded as the prime minister for Pueh Thai to be able to form a government. So for them, anything is better than the military, and they will just try to absorb any other party.
I mean, it's a fascinating drama out in Thailand, you know. Of course, many people say the coups that have been happening over the last 20 years are essentially around the succession issue. And because, you know, we've had the death of the former king and now the accession of the new king, much of that royal drama has been settled. But we go back to the old story of, you know, a Bangkok elite not liking Thaksin and doing anything it can to stop him ever to come back to power. If Pueh Thai were to, as it were, be able to snatch this victory from the military, do you think the military will stand by and allow it to go through? I mean, what chance is that if they don't get the results they want, they're just going to have another coup?
So the least they would do is, for me, from my understanding, they would delay if the numbers are not in their favour by the time May or June comes along when they would try to form a government. They would delay the process altogether just to prevent Pueh Thai and the rest to be in government. But a military coup, as you said, we can't rule that out 100% because the current army chief, General Aspirat, has actually come out and stated that he himself would not rule out such a scenario if the results are deemed to be undemocratic or is basically insult to the monarchy. So the statement there in itself is very vague. So it depends on him, on how he would interpret it. So yeah, so
it looks like the military. It looks like the military really wants to stay in power, regardless of how the results pan out. I mean, the ties that you spoke to, whether in business or just ordinary people, do they see the military as being having the wherewithal? I mean, we put aside democratic theory and ideals. Do they think the military has the wherewithal to lead a government that oversees a huge economy? It's about and are they confident that a military government has the talent to do so?
So based on my conversations with people in Thailand across the board, young and old, there's an understanding that Prayut is a good leader. He has done an okay job, although the economy to them has not fared well. But he has brought stability, peace and order to the country ever since the 2014 coup. So there is hope that the elderly, they are content with his leadership. For them, we just want stability. We do not want protests, the red shirts, yellow shirts. We just want peace, and the economy will fix itself. But for the young voters, they would say that, oh, we do not need the military to be involved in the landscape. We just need someone who is able to revive the economy, whether it's the old school leaders of the day or new chaps like Tan Ah-Tong.
Right, fascinating story. And we haven't even begun to talk about where China is in this game, because Prayut has been very close to China in some of its policies. We'll have to bring you back another time to talk further about Thailand, especially as we come closer to D-Day, you say, sometime in May, right? So the first week of May, we'll find out more. Thank you so much, Ayman, for being with me.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Ayman Afifuddin. He is a senior analyst with Khairul Islam Associates. He was in Thailand covering the elections there just this last week. This is Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, only for Astro One. Thanks.
Thank you.